I'm Kier from In Defense Of, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune. I am Stargate Pioneer, my friends, call me SP, and your reporters for this special pre-finale hiatus episode, Neil, you are crazy with that, of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
I haven't seen the movie!
And Michelle.
Oh, I don't think you've ever known a woman like me.
And Mr. Ferris.
I'm Batman.
This podcast is recorded on Thursday, April 21st, 2016, live on the Blab streaming service. We are just a few geeks that discuss the TV show Arrow. Just a little reminder that I am not a self-proclaimed comic guy. I'm really a sci-fi guy. But I'm catching up to the comic lore thanks to folks like Chris.
I'm changing my quote to, "Do you bleed?"
And actually Michelle, too. Michelle, you're a comic geek, right?
Yes.
And then also Ferris, who's a very big DC guy from back in the day.
Born and bred in a comic shop.
That explains it.
I'm sorry.
Just a reminder, during this podcast, we will be talking about the Warner Brothers movie Batman v. Superman - Dawn of Justice. Not Arrow, but everything up to the currently most recent aired episode of Arrow, Flash, and Supergirl are fair game for us. But most importantly, if you have not seen Batman versus Superman and you intend to, please do not listen to this podcast. This is your spoiler warning. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Just don't listen. Don't watch it.
We'll get to that later. But just if you really want to see it and you don't want to be spoiled, don't listen to this podcast. So that's your final warning. So we will be catching up on news articles and announcements related to Arrow after our main discussions that have dropped in the past week. And that is going to impact future episodes. And final reminder, final reminder, we will be doing spoilers on Batman versus Superman. All right. You have been warned like 3 times, so there you go. Just a little reminder that all our past shows that have been released can be found on the archives at GunnaGeek.com. Okay, Chris, you have not seen the movie yet.
That's correct, and I blame you and one big Papa John Drew for that.
Yes, and he has not seen the movie either, so you can basically just blame me. But you do have some items to explain about the movie, right?
Yeah, so here's some basics, folks. As we all know, it's Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. This is DC's first step towards creating the comprehensive DC cinematic universe, much in an attempt to catch up with what Marvel has done. Instead of spreading out over multiple films, DC's doing it in one film. This film released on March 20th, 2016 in the United States of America, March 25th, 2016 worldwide. The director is the very talented Zack Snyder. Who's brought us such films as my favorite film of all time, Man of Steel. I love that movie. Sucker Punch, Watchmen,
awful.
300, and Legends of the Guardians, The Owls of Ga'Hoole. I wanted to say Ga'Hoole.
I know, Ga'Hoole, right?
Ga'Hoole. And
Gabagool, I think. It's Italian.
That could be it. So the writers for this film were Chris Terrio and one David S. Goyer. Runtime of 2 hours and 31 minutes. The rumored runtime in the uncut version was over 4 hours, which will be coming in the Blu-ray. The budget was $250 million plus whatever they put into marketing. So here's some stats. As of April 19th, 2016, Batman v Superman has a domestic box office of roughly $312.7 million. Foreign box office of $521.1 million for a total take of $833,880,000. And just today, they announced it passed Iron Man 2 in gross box office.
Right. Well,
but not in your hearts.
Iron Man 2 is not that great a movie, but from what I understand, it's better than Batman v Superman.
It is totally better.
Did I just expose the rest of the recap?
Pretty much. I mean, we have been hemming and hawing about this movie. I went to go see it just because we were going to be talking about it, and I was with my son, and it was raining, so we're like, what are we going to do for a few hours? Oh, let's go see Batman v Superman. I will never get that time back.
How do you really feel?
It was a terrible movie, really, until the final 30 minutes. And the final fight was good, but everything up to that really sucked. And I'm really pissed at Zack Snyder. And I will go into a little bit more detail, but I will never watch another Zack Snyder movie again. I will never watch another Michael Bay movie again after his crap with Transformers. It is just not my speed.
SP, was the popcorn at least good?
We didn't have popcorn because we went out to eat right beforehand.
Sorry, Mad Hatter, I tried.
There you go. So that's just how I feel. If you want a full recap, it's out there. I mean, there's plenty of articles and everything like that. I felt, let me just throw a few things out there. I felt the movie was completely disjointed. There was no exposition done. The movie seemed to jump around from place to place without any purpose whatsoever at the beginning. Jimmy Olsen was killed off. I didn't even know why he was killed off. It just, he was killed off and he wasn't a photographer. He was a CIA guy. Okay. And the whole reason that Batman and Superman were fighting was really stupid. All they had to do was talk to each other and they didn't. It was just, it made no sense.
SP, they talk with their fists. Okay. They talk via fisticuffs.
Yeah. And even then it was a handcuff fight because Superman was holding back the whole time because all he wanted was Batman's help. So that's the basics of what I think about it. Michelle, you saw the movie too, right?
Yes. And I'm really glad I only paid $4.25 to see it.
This is such ringing endorsements so far on tonight's episode.
I saw it for $5.
See, I got you beat. I have to, just disclosure. I went with my mom who loves Batman and who, let's just say, she's very kind to movies. Okay. Like she will sit through and everything and she'll be like, oh, yeah, yeah. So after this movie, I was like, Mom, what'd you think? And she's just was like, meh. And for my mom, a meh is basically SPs. I hated it. I just was like, Ben Affleck, I think, is a great Batman. I thought that was cool. And I'm really looking forward to Wonder Woman. I wasn't disappointed with the Wonder Woman aspect because I'm like, at least like for me, it's like I went in with, I really hope Wonder Woman doesn't suck. Like that was my bar and everything. And I was just really happy. It's like Wonder Woman doesn't suck.
That's right. She only had 16 lines in the movie, as I remember hearing on either Legends podcast or Audibly Exquisite. They both have done Batman versus Superman reviews.
I don't think it was that many.
I think Wing actually looked it up. It was 16 lines, and I trust Wing's.
Nah, it can't be that many. I think it's closer to 2.
Okay, maybe 2 full lines.
I may be exaggerating, but not by much.
Right. So, Ferris, we've had a chance to talk about it. Go ahead. What's your initial thoughts?
Batfleck is awesome. Batfleck is good. I mean, Batfleck was good enough that I should have seen it 3 times by now as a lifelong Batman fan who has been disappointed in virtually every cinematic incarnation of Batman. All of them. Yeah, even that one, the one you like. All of them.
You didn't like Batman and Robin? It was the best.
Oh, well, that one, obviously. That's the hardcore one. I've been waiting my whole life to see that kind of Batman action on screen. And believe me, I've been disappointed a lot. But the rest of the movie has prevented me from being excited enough to go see it a 3rd and 4th time. Captain America, 3 times in the theater. Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Mad Max Fury Road, 3 times in the theater. This one, best movie Batman ever. Only seen it once.
See, I didn't think it was the best Batman ever because his thought process was so skewed that he refused to believe Superman was actually a good guy.
We can save that for the character. I was talking strictly in action Batman, because my problem with virtually all previous Batmans, and certainly the major movies, some of the direct to DVD or direct to video movies have had some good and respectable action. But in all previous Batman movies, no scene has ever been able to be described thus. Bad guys are doing bad things. Enter Batman. Batman kicks all kinds of ass in creative, innovative, strategic ways. Like, that has never truly happened in a Batman movie before. In this one, it does. But everything that surrounds it...
The way Batman's combat got described to me, and I kind of would agree with it after seeing at least the trailers that showcase that, is if you've played the Arkham games by Rocksteady Studios, his combat is very influenced by, like, the stealthy and brutal combat techniques that Batman employs in games like Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, and Arkham Knight. And I could see it in the trailer, at least, when I saw it, and I was like, that looks really cool. I want to see that. That's why when they announced the Ben Affleck Batman movie that he's doing, I'm like, okay, that's what I want to see based off everything I've heard. If I want to see Batman and Superman fight, I'm either going to pull out the old comics or I'm going to go watch the animated adaptation of Dark Knight Returns.
Yes, which is excellent.
It's a direct translation of the book, so it's very good.
So Batman action, I like the rest of it. Character, you're right.
Okay. So we're in agreement. I thought we'd have more of a ebb and flow here, but I'm glad we've come to that agreement. So Superman, Man of Steel. We just rewatched it a little bit ago. I know Chris absolutely hates it.
I loathe that movie.
I don't mind Man of Steel, but the Superman that was portrayed in this movie was just a guy that was lost, a guy that was hunted by the planet that he was trying to protect. And it just wasn't a good adaptation of Superman. Not at all. Now, eventually we might have gotten there, but we had one movie as setup and then boom.
So the problem is Zack Snyder doesn't get Superman. Superman has all these great powers, but he has to control himself because they did it best in one of the Justice League cartoons. He lives in a world of cardboard. He always has to hold back lest he destroy the world around him. So he finally gets to fight Darkseid at one point and goes, now I can let everything out. We can see just how powerful I really am. You don't really get that. This Superman is, stuff's getting destroyed around me. Sucks, dude. I mean, their concession to that in this movie, from what I understand, is they make a point of saying all of the combat and all the destruction's occurring in either evacuated portions of town or nobody's working at this time of night, so nobody will be in those buildings. That's lazy. It's incredibly lazy.
They made a point to say that like three times, like nobody comes here at night.
It's because people crucified Man of Steel for the fact of, if you ever read a Superman comic, one of the first things he does is try and take the fighting away from civilians. Superman tries to protect the people because he is immensely overpowered, and if he slips up, people are going to get hurt. The thing that Zack Snyder doesn't get about this character is the fundamental core of the character. He's a good person, he tries to do the right things, and it's not his powers that define him, it's his human nature in an alien that defines him.
Well, one of the things I've always admired about Superman is that he's lost an entire planet. I mean, he's like the ultimate orphan. He doesn't have aunts and uncles or anything, but he still is a fundamentally good guy. He's still able to just go out there and want to save people. And that's what I'm missing from the films.
So we had the destruction of Metropolis in Man of Steel. And then, to my knowledge, the Daily Planet was one of the buildings that was destroyed. But 18 months later, it's the same building, a style. It's got the same Daily Planet thing up there. 18 months later, and the building is rebuilt? Not possible.
Time and money, man. Money overcomes time all the time.
What is also impossible, perhaps this is a quibble, but as a writer, as a newspaper person who has done the job that Superman does, essentially. If you're having a problem with your editor about whether you are or are not going to cover that week's football game that has happened already, it is not a 2 or 3 or 4 or 7 day argument about whether you're going to write the story. Like, you need to write that today. It's not something that you keep coming back to. I don't know if that impacted the movie for other people, but...
The good point.
To me, it maybe is emblematic of the idea that maybe Zack Snyder does not think things through. And I know he didn't write it, but Zack Snyder et al. Will say.
So let's go on to Wonder Woman. I did enjoy her. We talked about her a little bit earlier, but she was the best part of the movie, absolutely. And we see her very minimal. Did you guys feel like she, Gal Gadot, embodied Wonder Woman? I had serious doubts. I don't think she's really the body type for Wonder Woman, but she did pull the character off. What do you think, Chris?
So, like, again, I've said I haven't seen it, but everything I've heard from people I trust who've seen it have said Gal Gadot stole the show as Wonder Woman. She was the best part of the movie. And in many cases, when people watched this movie on opening weekend, the biggest audience response was when Wonder Woman shows up on screen just to kick some ass. Or like when Doomsday flings her across into a, when they're fighting and she hits a wall and she's like, oh, this is how we're going to do it, basically, and launches herself back into battle. People got uber amped up and hyped for that. And that has me excited. And that actually has me wanting to see the Wonder Woman movie, which I was kind of like, I don't know if I care about this. I'm intrigued now. I won't go on the record and say I'm definitely going right now. I want to see more about it, but I'm more likely to now than I would have before.
Yeah, for all the things that they were able to stuff into the movie, and they put in a lot, it's a long movie. I feel that, you know, maybe the difference between me not having seen it twice and having seen it only once, couldn't they have given her own scene? Couldn't they have given her a 5-minute Wonder Woman does something? Because she does not truly have her own scene in the movie, which, given how well they handled her when she does show up, is criminal.
So to me, it almost felt like the whole Hawkeye in Thor situation, where it's, we've got to cram this character in because we want them to be part of the overall universe. Like, if you're not familiar with the Thor instance, Jeremy Renner was cast after they'd done all the filming for Thor. So they basically did a minor reshoot to have Clark Gregg's Coulson talk to him, and then just did shots of him up in a tower. It's not quite that bad a ham-fistedness, but it seemed like they're like, we have to put her in here so that we can set up the movie that's coming after that. And let alone the setup of the Justice League. That was, yeah, I have issues.
Quick note on Wonder Woman. I thought that, I don't know if it exactly conveys her character, but I thought that when she got knocked over in the fight and she looked up and smiled and, you know, as you said, okay, now it's on. And she was clearly enjoying it. That was one of the few times in the movie where the action conveyed something about the character. I mean, the action and the fighting was impressive. Yeah, again, it was good at Batman fighting, but nothing about the action, the way he moved, the way he fought, the way he reacted really conveyed who he was, how he thought. So it was very mechanical and it was butt kicking, but it was a kind of soulless butt kicking. Now, to contrast that, if you watch Marvel fights, the great Philip Silvera choreographs Daredevil, choreographed Captain America, the Winter Soldier. He has a brilliant way of working some actual character motion into the fights. How many of you have seen Daredevil season 2 at all?
Haven't seen any of it yet because I'm way behind.
Yeah, I've seen it all.
I'm thinking about the scene in episode 5, I believe, when Daredevil and Elektra fight the ninjas. You have the one head guy kind of hanging back and watching and watching. And when he finally moves in, you know, they're not just fighting, but they're fighting in ways that convey who these people are and what's going on in their head and how they think. And that is what I think is lacking from the otherwise very good action in this. You know, it's just action, but it's not necessarily an expression of their character. And I think Wonder Woman was the only one who you learned something about via the way she was fighting.
Mm-hmm. And Michelle, you were going to say something about Wonder Woman?
It's like almost all the scenes in this movie, it was just like tacked on, tacked on, tacked on, tacked on. But Gal Gadot took what she was given and just made the most of it. It's like she overcame the script. She overcame the director and just really got into it. And that's why I think she's the best part of the movie.
Yeah, I did enjoy her. And she was part of the fight in the last 30 minutes that I enjoyed as well. So
yeah, pound for pound, there is nothing bad about her or her performance or what she does in the movie or what her character does.
Right. I love the lasso moment where she's holding on to Doomsday with the lasso with everything she's got. And that was just all great. So on to another character that I did not like one bit was Lex Luthor. He didn't portray Lex the way Lex should be portrayed. It was like a combination of the Joker, the Riddler, and Lex. And it just wasn't the standard Lex. The methodical, the plotting, the intelligent it was a crazy kid, and it just wasn't Lex to me. What do you think, Michelle, about Lex?
Yeah, it's like he kept mentioning his father, and they kept talking about that, and it's almost like there was this whole backstory that he just wanted to talk about, but was never there. It's like, why did he keep talking about his dad? Did he just inherit everything? Has he been in power for a while? It was just like, it wasn't very fleshed out. I have no idea what his motivation was for anything in this movie.
Ferris, what do you think?
Not a compelling characterization of Lex Luthor. I mean, he is smart, but I mean, he's not an unfathomable genius. You know, he's just kind of there, some crazy kid doing things because he has daddy issues.
Mm-hmm.
Is what I took away from it. And it's certainly not a joyful performance. He didn't seem to be having fun. Lex Luthor, you always get the sense, is doing what he does for a good reason and believes that he is right. And this one seems that he knows to be being sneaky and is doing things that are wrong for the wrong reasons, but he's doing them anyway. You follow? Like, Lex Luthor generally believes that he is the good guy and he's the one who's saving the Earth from Superman. And even if he's being selfish about it, he thinks he's doing the right thing.
So for me, my Lex Luthor is Clancy Brown from the Justice League cartoons and the Superman cartoons and things like that, that portrays the stereotypical Lex Luthor, over-the-top ego that feels he's doing what he needs to do because he has to, and Superman is the alien that can't be trusted. And from what it looked like to me is Zuckerberg's trying to play, well, not Zuckerberg, sorry, Eisenberg is playing a Mark Zuckerberg-esque character, is how a lot of people described it. Kind of the, well, I'm going to sound like a real douche here, the millennial version of Lex Luthor, for lack of a better term. And I don't think it worked. And the thing that kills me, and this is an internet rumor, so I have no idea if it's true. I vaguely remember reading an article where Zack Snyder said they had Bryan Cranston in, or they were going to have Bryan Cranston in to talk about Lex Luthor. Until Eisenberg came in to read for Jimmy Olsen, he goes, no, I want him as Lex Luthor. So they didn't even bring Bryan Cranston in for Lex Luthor, which would have been perfect. Let's be honest. After Breaking Bad ended, everyone went, Bryan Cranston needs to be Lex Luthor. And just picture, take him a second right now, pause, picture it in your head, Heisenberg is Lex Luthor. Man, that would have been really good. It's an opportunity missed. I'm not saying it had to be that, but I think with the performance we got, or the version of Lex we got in this movie, man, just imagine what a Heisenberg Luthor would have been.
That would have been awesome. And I would have preferred that much greater. Not that the performance wasn't bad, because how the performance came off was fine. It just didn't fit the character at all. And I didn't appreciate it at all. Although, I haven't thought too much about this, but the Alfred character actually was pretty decent. I didn't have any qualms. Wasn't a huge centerpiece of the movie, but Alfred was okay. Don't you think, Ferris?
Yeah, absolutely. He had that kind of fatherly gravitas to him, where he seemed like an authoritative character that you want to listen to, and he has a perspective on things, and you can see how he's a good balance toward Bruce's more violent based savage impulses, should we say. You know, I mean, Bruce does what he's going to do, but he needs to have a conscience, some kind of leader, you know, at least steering him, directing him, making him think twice.
And I think that was successfully done here. Michelle, what do you think?
I enjoyed the interaction between Alfred and Batman. It was really good casting. I was not disappointed.
It's Jeremy Irons. You can't go wrong.
Awesome. And then, of course, we get Zod back as Doomsday. And it's all right. It was a big bad that ended up needing these three superheroes to combat him. But
it never should have been given away in the trailer. Never.
Yeah, I didn't really get how he was formed. It was like a Zod's body, some dripping of Lex blood, and I guess a magic wand or something. I don't know. And then we got a big bad guy.
Very, very advanced version of 3D printing.
I can see it.
All right. I said what my big beats were of the movie. We all had our initial foyer, so I don't want to really go through that anymore. But it was there something that worked for you? Like I said, the final 30 minutes was pretty good for me. Ferris, you mentioned the action of Batman was good for you. Michelle, what do you think?
I actually understand why people find Ben Affleck attractive now. I get it. It wasn't just the fact that he took off his shirt and did the Stephen Amell arrow routine. That helped. But there was something about like the way he carried himself and the gray hair and all that type of stuff. It was like, Ben Affleck's attractive? Wow. So that was a highlight for me.
All right.
Yeah, something that I particularly liked about Batman, if the movie's Batman content would have ended after the first scene of just Bruce driving around Metropolis in that SUV, not in the Batman suit, just driving around, being bound and determined to do the right thing, to help some people, to get at the heart of the matter, I would have been satisfied with that. I think that would have been maybe the best on-screen Batman yet. I really like that. And if his portrayal, if his characterization would have ended right there, maybe it would have been for the better. But I thought that first scene was tremendous, just to see that overlap between who Bruce is, who Batman is, and you really see him burning to go in and help.
Right. But to me, it ended with him being mad at the wrong thing. And that just set the tone for the movie just horribly wrong for the rest of it. It skewed my view of Ben Affleck as Batman. And then you're right. The action, the actual fighting was fine. But I have an issue with him in the first two-thirds of the film, or however long it was.
Bear in mind that Batman's also a straight-up killer.
Apparently so. In this movie, he definitely is, and that's how Zack Snyder has chosen to portray him. And, Robin, I've seen some articles lately, Chris, about this whole thing. Do you want to recap how the media has covered this movie?
So there was an interesting article I saw, I think it was on Entertainment Weekly. It goes, hey, guess what? Robin was a murderer too, because if you go and look at the art books that have come out, it's like the art behind developing the costumes, he's basically carrying a battle axe. The Robin costume you see in the Batcave, you don't see his full staff. It's not a bow staff like you see in the comics. It's a battle axe. And I don't think you're using that just to wound people. Could be wrong. Maybe I'm biased. I mean, I've already made it fairly clear that the movie does not interest me that much.
You know, we've talked about the negative a lot, and I don't want to pick on it, but here is a very big detail that I haven't seen get a lot of discussion in it. The movie that Bruce and his parents are leaving from in this version of it is Excalibur, not the traditional Zorro or a bat opera, right? And traditionally, it's Zorro. Everybody knows this, right? But you couldn't have Zorro because it's, what, 1981, and Zorro's not going to be in the theater, right? Wrong. Guess what movie was, in fact, in theaters in 1981?
Excalibur?
Starring Godfather III's own George Hamilton, Zorro the Gay Blade.
Interesting.
So there was, in fact, a Zorro movie in the theaters in 1981.
Hmm.
So it was cute that they tried to come up with a little mythological tie-in with Excalibur. It was nice. Technically not necessary, which I think is you can say that about a lot of the movie.
I was going to say some more positives is Zack Snyder makes very pretty films. Like even in the trailers, you see shots that are straight out of the Dark Knight Returns comic book. Like the scene of Batman shooting his grapple gun while lightning strikes. He's in the exact same pose you see in the comic. There is some gorgeous cinematography in here. It's just the story wrapped around it, I don't think holds up in places.
The actual shots, the pretty shots, were just not my style of pretty. So that didn't work for me either, but they were grandiose. They were out of the comic book and it was dark.
Well, even Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns, which is the seminal work of dark comic book fiction, has a color palette to it.
Yes.
And this, I don't know if that is a color palette. It's just kind of there.
Yeah. I didn't see too much color in there.
But I think that this film's real offense is that it commits real violence against the potential Bat film legacy by strip mining Dark Knight Returns. At this point, you can't do a Dark Knight Returns movie, and we're finally in an era where you could make that movie for real. but by stripping away key images and sampling key dialogue. And, you know, the whole thesis that is the worldview of Batman versus the worldview of Superman, those have been used in a subpar Batman movie now, so we can't really get those in that. And I understand how that story couldn't be told with this version of the DC Cinematic Universe, but do we need that? You know, I'd rather see a Dark Knight Returns movie than what they're setting up.
So there's the setup, but there's a few things that I'd like to talk about in the movie that we haven't talked about yet. First of all, the Wayne's death. There was a lot of talk about the gun being put inside the pearl necklace, and that's what broke the pearl necklace, whatever. And a lot of people are being traditionalists about it and saying, no, that wouldn't have happened or whatever. So that's a break in tradition as well. We talked about the movies and everything like that. The connection to Flash. Now, there was a few dream sequences that came out of nowhere. You had no idea what they were from. And that is part of the disjointedness that I saw of the movie. And that's the big things that I have. So let's talk about the setup, because you brought it up. It does this movie set up the next movies like Suicide Squad and the rest?
Not so much Suicide Squad, but it's definitely setting up the Justice League, it seems like, and the characters comprising the Justice League. And by all reports, kind of shoehorned in. I'll defer to you guys. Did you guys feel as though the Justice League references and the teasing of those characters was shoehorned in, or did it fit in there naturally?
Michelle?
It was almost like a postscript. Like, they're there, and they've buried Clark, and it's just like, hey, there's some other people out there. Yeah, something's coming. I think something bad's coming. We should go get them. There's no, like, you know, Sam Jackson, Nick Fury sort of, let me talk to you about an initiative. Nothing like that. There's just, like, standing around going, we should get these people. Okay.
If it wasn't for the active TV shows on right now, I don't know if I would really care about The Flash. And it kind of just shoehorned it in there very abruptly. In any event, let's just move on. Any final thoughts, Chris?
I'm glad that we have the TV versions of the DC characters. Like I said, I think Flash is one of the best things on TV right now.
Yeah, I mean, again, with the issue of color palette, the Flash is not a character that lends himself to the grungy aesthetic that we saw.
And DC characters don't really lend themselves to that grunginess once you step outside the Batman world. And they've kind of morphed Batman to do that in the more recent day. By recent day, I mean like the 80s and up. But this is one of those movies, like I said, I haven't seen it. And in part, it's because of the reaction that SP had when he saw it. I was kind of kicking it around. And I was like, okay, I'm going to hold off. It's not that I'll never watch it. I'm just waiting for it to come to HBO or to Netflix or something like that, because I just wasn't that excited, and I didn't want to waste my money. I didn't want to go to a 2.5 hour, or feel like I'm wasting my money, rather, and go to a 2.5 hour long movie that has an extra half hour of previews and commercials tacked on top of it, and come out after 3 hours and just be like, why did I do that? Maybe I'm being overly cynical, and maybe I'm a DC hater. People have accused me of that, but the Marvel movies are more my flavor right now because they're fun. There's darkness to them, but you come out and you're like, I really enjoyed that. The spectacle of it, I can enjoy a lot of the time.
If you want to hear a Batman fan, that is Wing over on Legends Podcast. They reviewed this movie, Beef and Shirtako and Wing. And Wing had to say, this was not a good movie. And he's really had some issues with it as well, which I was shocked. When we talked about it before on this podcast, I assumed Wing was going to glow over the movie. He didn't. He had serious issues with the movie. And then also, over on Audibly Exquisite, they didn't think it was a bad movie, but they didn't think it was a good movie either. So that's just some bounds on the Gunna Geek Network to think about it. So, Michelle, what do you think about the Flash in this movie?
I really wasn't intrigued by The Flash or Aquaman or any of the others. For me, it's just bring on Wonder Woman. Like, that's what I got from this movie, was just bring on Wonder Woman. And I'm really happy to say that there's going to be a Wonder Woman movie. It's not. I see set pictures and there's stills coming out and there's footage. So it's like now I feel like it's real, and I'm really happy about it.
The one other thing that I had an issue with was the whole Kevin Costner scene in this movie. I couldn't place it. I had no idea if it was a dream sequence, no idea where it popped from. It was just completely out of the blue and no idea. So let's do some final thoughts. We'll start with Ferris.
I think one day, I mean, now apparently it's official that there's going to be a Ben Affleck directed Batman movie. And I think when we see that, maybe all this will be worthwhile and maybe it will make us forget about it. But again, I wish there were, you know, as someone who spent his whole life waiting for that kind of Batman action scene in a Batman movie, just there's not enough else in the movie to make me want to see the movie twice. And I wish there were.
So what I think will be interesting is there's a lot of complaints that it's disjointed. Like I mentioned earlier, supposedly there was about 4+ hours worth of stuff this movie was comprised of before they cut it down. So whenever they put the Blu-ray or the DVD director's cut out, maybe then people can go back and look at it and make, this makes a little more sense plot-wise how they get from these points. I still think some of the other complaints might exist, but you might understand more of the story because it's not so hacked up to fit in a 2.5-hour block.
Michelle?
Maybe once that 4 hours is released, somebody can actually do a better edit of this. Like apparently there's somebody, I think it's Topher Grace or somebody who did a cut of the prequel, Star Wars prequels, and people who have seen it, it said it's like much better than the actual movies. So I'm going to wait for that.
That's true. And for the record, this is Batman versus Superman. This was the movie that we were all looking forward to for decades. And they just couldn't go wrong, which is why it's made $800,000 or more at this point in time. But it could have made over $2 billion just with these names alone. And it just didn't happen.
It should have. I mean, and people were super excited. We saw that in opening weekend where the numbers were ridiculous. And then you saw how word of mouth spread after that. It was what, like an 82% drop between opening weekend and second weekend?
Right. And I think the numbers explain it all for this and why it's a flop. Why it's still a financial success because it made more than it cost to make. And that's minus, you have to take out promotion because they never throw that money in.
And it beat Iron Man 2.
Right. So it's a success, but it's not a success because in my mind, with these guys, it should have been over $2 billion. So,
I'll completely agree.
Okay. I'm not going to go see Suicide Squad. That's a different story for a different podcast.
Until Neil makes us watch it.
That's right. Next week, Arrow is back. We're going to be dealing with the aftermath of Laurel's death. It is an episode called Canary Cry, and that will be airing on Wednesday, April 27th, 2016. It is a new director on Arrow. It would be Laura Beasley. But the writers are well-known, Wendy Miracle and Beth Schwartz. So at least the storyline will be from the big wigs. Let's just recap some of the major Arrow news, Chris, this week. So why don't you start us off with the flashbacks in season 4 of Arrow?
Sure. We'll talk flashbacks real quick. Mark Guggenheim and Wendy Miracle did an interview with TV Line, where they pretty much opened up and discussed the flashbacks from season 3, season 4, and they kind of admitted it's a little meandering, and they did experiment with not tying them directly to the current storylines, and pretty much they've kind of admitted, yeah, the flashbacks didn't work quite as well as we hoped they would. I think the hope is season 5 they do a little better with the Russia side of things.
Yeah, because we still got to go to Russia.
It's true.
Apparently, John Ramsey is stating that because of the death of Laurel and the taking of Katie out of the team, that PTSD is now affecting the cast.
He did say he's no exception, so we're seeing a Diggle that we've never seen before. And the previews for next week seem to indicate that Diggle's kind of on the edge. Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we know Oliver is because we've seen the limo scene. So
Oliver's always on the edge.
Right. So I guess Arrow has wrapped for the year.
That's right. I just saw a bunch of photos on all of these stars' Instagrams, Facebooks, Twitters, and things like that last night. And there was some fun stuff going on. Stephen Amell was singing Don't Stop Believing. Neil McDonough jamming out on the harmonica. So go check out your favorite Arrow actors' social media accounts. You can see some pretty fun celebrations that took place post-season 4 filming.
So, Michelle, question for you. Will Felicity rejoin Team Arrow?
I don't think so. I think she's going to be sticking to running Palmer Tech.
I think they have to do that.
Well, apparently Mark Guggenheim had something to say about it.
He did say there's two issues at play for Felicity, who exited the show after breaking off her engagement. First of all, she's broken up with Oliver, and she's also broken up with the team. So she's got to reestablish those bonds if she wants to come back. And we'll see what happens there. Based off current fan reaction, who knows when that reunion will happen. I assume it's going to happen at some point, but it might not be as soon as certain people are clamoring for.
And then Neil dropped this into the show notes. It is an article titled "The Rise and the Fall of Felicity Smoke."
So it's a very interesting op-ed over on Yahoo, and here's the basic takeaway. We'll give you the buzz so you can go read it for yourself. They say, for quite some time, Felicity was everyone's favorite character. She could do no wrong. The audiences loved her. Now she's near universally hated. So what changed? In real high level, they kind of get into the fact that they kind of sacrificed part of her character to be in the relationship, and they just haven't really done a good job with that relationship between Felicity and Oliver, and then they broke it off, and they're kind of stuck with what they do with them. It's a very interesting piece. It touches on some of the concerns I've started having with how the Felicity character has shifted in this recent season, and well worth reading. I would suggest you head on over to the show notes and read that. And before we go off the news, there was one breaking piece I found while we were recording. It's not Arrow news, but it's Superman news, so it kind of ties in with the whole Batman v Superman thing. It was announced today that Sci-Fi has ordered a pilot for the Superman prequel, Krypton, which was supposedly going to be inspired by a lot of what we'd seen in Man of Steel for the Krypton scenes there.
The first 15 minutes of Man of Steel with some of the best superhero scenes I've ever seen. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they can adapt. I have my concerns about how they can adapt that on a weekly basis, but that's just me.
Want to know how it ends?
Yeah, we all know how that one ends. They did get a little bit of a teaser. They said, set two generations before the destruction of the titular planet, Krypton will follow Superman's grandfather, whose House of El has been ostracized and shamed as he tries to redeem his family's name and save his world. Executive producer David S. Goyer, who wrote Man of Steel and co-wrote Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, has been developing it since 2014 and penned the pilot with Ian Goldberg. So if you're a fan of David S. Goyer, you're probably going to like what you see. If you're not a fan of David S. Goyer, like myself on most of his stuff, you might be cautious.
I think Sci-Fi has started to redeem themselves, starting with Defiance, which is now canceled. But you have Defiance, you have The Expanse, you have Dark Matter, you have Killjoys, you have 12 Monkeys. Very good shows. There's been some flops for me in there, as well as the Ronald D. Moore stupid series. What I can't even remember what it's called. H something, like Hive or something.
Helix.
No, Helix. That's just sucked for me. But Sci-Fi has done good, and my point there is that if anybody can pull this off right now, I hope Sci-Fi can, but I do have some concerns. We'll see how it pans out. What else am I going to do, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, Chris, we are part of a geeky network, aren't we?
We are? I don't know what you're talking about. No, no. SP's right. We are part of a geeky network of like-minded podcast hosts, producers, and talent. It's called the Gunna Geek Network. So if you want to find out more about that, head over to GunnaGeekNetwork.com. You can find out about the 18 different active shows that comprise the network. But this week, we want to highlight a show by our friends over at Art House Legends entitled Inherit the Wind. It's creationism versus evolution in this fictionalized account of the Scopes Monkey Trial, starring Spencer Tracy and Frederick March. So if you want to hear about their experience with that flick, head on over to GunnaGeekNetwork.com, click on the Art House Legends logo, and you'll find this most recent podcast and their entire back catalog.
I want to thank all our listeners, all our viewers on Blab who download the podcasts on iTunes or Google Play Music or Stitcher or TuneIn. Thank you very much for watching the replay on YouTube. We really appreciate you bringing us into your lives.
Yeah, thank you so much. And a big thank you to everyone who participated live in the Blab tonight. We were running a little late because, hey, technical difficulties happen. So those of you that stuck with us and came and chatted, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Depending on time, we might open up a seat. One of us might hop off to let people on. I'm not sure. We might just wrap the show. But normally we do open up a seat, and in the future we will do so. So you guys can join us on Blab. The next live show on the Gunna Geek Network that you can watch over at geeks.live is All Things Good Nerdy on Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. I almost said specific, which would have made no sense.
That's right.
No sense.
So, Michelle, when you listen to the podcast, how do you listen to it?
I listen to it through iTunes.
Through iTunes. So have you gone to iTunes and given Starling Tribune a 5-star review?
Of course I have.
Awesome.
Just like many people who are listening to do so right now. After you have listened, you should go over, rate this podcast 5 stars.
Yeah, rate, review, and subscribe. And we would really appreciate a funny review, and we will read it on the podcast and we will all laugh. But don't forget to subscribe. That's very important. Subscribe to the podcast no matter where you listen to it. If it's iTunes, if it's Google Play Music, if it's TuneIn, Stitcher, whatever, we would really appreciate you to subscribe.
Very much so. Don't forget, you can find all of our contact information over on the Gunna Geek Network over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. While you're there, check out the forums, check out one of the other awesome podcasts that make up the network. If you want to send us some feedback or your thoughts on the most recent episode of Arrow or Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, head over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or best of all, give us a call on our voicemail at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. But I think that is going to start wrapping us up for this week. It's been a great episode, guys. It's been a lot of fun hearing what everyone thought about Batman v Superman. But before we sign off, Ferris, where can folks find you online?
Oh, I have one catch-all website. Check out mybutt.com.
Really?
Okay, that is awesome.
Yes.
That's awesome.
I'm not kidding. So you can find my webcomic there. You can find links to the books. You can find links to my Twitter, everything. Check out mybutt.com. Can't believe it was still available.
I can't believe that.
Fantastic.
Prince, RIP, the man who gave us Bat Dance. Quick moment of silence for him. Can't talk about Batman without Bat Dance.
Very true. So everyone go to check out Ferris's website. It is quite possibly the best website name of anyone on the network. I think that is fan-freaking-tastic. Before we get out of here, also, Michelle, where can folks find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Michelle Ely.
There you go. And SP, we know where to find you already.
Yeah, in jail after this.
Or maybe jail. I don't have any bail money to send you. I'm sorry.
Well, it's Iron Heights, so I'll get out in a week anyway.
That's true. Because plot.
Right.
Careful, because if you go into jail with one of those Batman boomerang marks on you, it's all over.
You're toast, man.
Yeah, Ferris, I just have to reiterate, that's an awesome website name. I was able to grab #itsallconnected.com, and I thought that was good. Check out mybutt.com. That is awesome.
That was my good idea for the 20th century. So,
right. How about we sign off and say some last words and then maybe open up the blab? So let's start with Chris at the Chris Farrell on Twitter.
#NeverSawTheMovie.
At DX Ferris.
Baffleck like a mofo. He was the bomb.
He was the bomb in Phantoms, yo.
At Michelle Ely.
#Lasso.
And you can find me at Stargate Pioneer. And I'm going to say #BatmanVSuperman Fail. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.